Welcome, guys, back to the Drunken Dead. It's your host,
Heyo,
Tip.
and I'm Kizza.
So we're here to give you guys a story today. So make sure you pull up a glass of your favorite beverage. I'm drinking some white wine.
I'm actually gonna drink some water. I'm on a crap ton of meds, and I don't think medication and alcohol. I don't think it mixes. So yeah, I'm unfortunately, and I know this is the first episode, but I'm drinking water.
I suggest alcohol and meds.
No. I'll really be leaning out the damn door. So I'm just gonna drink this water and look at this beautiful, beautiful bottle of soju that I wanted to drink for our first episode.
Oh, what flavor?
Strawberry. You know my favorite flavor?
I love strawberry. Strawberry soju, guys. That shit be bussin'.
Bussin'. So that's what I'm doing. And I want to apologize if I sound like phlegmy or gross, because I can only open my mouth to like a certain degree without it being painful. So,
yeah.
And so I don't know why we picked me to tell the first story, but you know. Can't make
we're
anything
here for
unless
it.
There's a little bit of pain.
But we're here for it.
We're here for a good time, not a long time. And I think I think this really just shows like the dedication.
Yes, sis.
That's so corny. That's so ugly. Oh my gosh. Okay. So
who's this case about to be about?
Okay, I'm so glad you asked that, Tip. I'm so happy you asked. His name,
do I know
this
person?
Fucking shit stain of a, you know what, I don't think that you would, because this was way before our time.
But, I mean, like, do I know of this person, not do I know who he is?
Like, well, okay, so it's definitely everything about him is like in the area where we grew up in, so you think you would hear like, I don't know, spooky bedtime stories about this guy or something.
That's wild. Spooky bedtime stories.
Surprisingly, I didn't even hear of him until I looked him up.
Where is he from?
I'll get into that.
Okay.
I start to tell you about him. It's a secret.
Jeez, the attitude.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
So, this man's name should be Satan, but it's actually Edward Arthur Surratt. And I hope to God that I'm pronouncing it correctly, because
sorry about that noise, guys. She's getting phone calls out the butt.
Sorry, I just seem to be the most popular when I have something I need to fucking do. Anyways, Edward Arthur Surratt. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. I've only seen one video on him. It was like 10 minutes. And that's how they pronounced it, so that's how I'm going to pronounce it. If anybody out there has the same name as this person, or like he has some ancestors or whatever, because he was married and never said if he did have children. So this is your daddy or your granddaddy or your great-great-granddaddy. I am so sorry for butchering all y'all's names. Truly am. And I'm so sorry if you were related to this man. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not even going to get into it. Anyways. This man was born on August 8th, 1941.
That's a long ass time ago.
Yeah, it is. And he was born in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania.
Ah, that's like northwest of Pittsburgh.
That it is. Yeah. And it's awfully close to the place that we call our little hometown.
Yeah, because we're southwest.
We're from Styx. Okay.
I would say it's probably like 2 hours away from us.
Yeah, it's. I had a friend whose dad lived out there, and she used to go visit him often. I think it was only an hour away, though. An hour. I think an hour at the most.
There's no way, because Pittsburgh is an hour.
But I think it's in the opposite direction of Pittsburgh.
No, it's north of Pittsburgh. Either way, it's fine.
I know it's close. I don't think I've ever driven through it. I think I've driven past like a like an exit that said like Aliquippa, but I don't think I've ever been in Aliquippa.
Yeah.
And after this, I don't want to go. Maybe I don't even want to go. All right, we're gonna say I think it's an hour away, maybe 2 hours away, give or take. It ain't that far, is the point. Anyways, he was born to lovely parents, from what I've read, from what I've heard. And their names were Arthur Surratt and Anna Mae Surratt. So little Eddie was named after his dad. And his dad was a successful entrepreneur. In the doc, the little 10-minute doc that I watched, it said that he was like a garbage man, or he owned a garbage company.
By the way, guys, I looked it up. And from our hometown, Aliquippa is 1 hour and 13 minutes. You were right.
Girl.
It's not 2 hours. You was right.
Hot Miss Express. Okay. So back to his parents. What I listened to, like in that little doc, one of his little friends were on there. Well, he's not little anymore. Very respected man. He's an older gentleman. But like his parents would have said, one of y'all little friends, I'm not one of y'all little friends. He was on there saying that like his parents were very respected in the community, especially his father. Like he was like a kind of like no nonsense kind of dude. It wasn't that he was mean. He was just like, you know, he's like a dad, like just kind of like, this is like in the day when like dads weren't really home.
Yeah.
But because, you know, they were out working and stuff and mom was home. And then when they came back, you know, they put their foot down and you listened. And that was kind of,
so they were like just dad. Like stern, like.
Yeah, like I heard the dad was stern, but the mom was sweet and it kind of balanced him out. It says, you know, from everything I read, he had a very stable childhood, you know, nothing crazy happened. And he was a really good kid. They said he had a very stable childhood. Nothing, you know, crazy happened, nothing bad, nothing like, this isn't like a nurture versus nature situation, because his childhood was so good. And he was basically an honor student all the way up until eighth grade. And that's about like the high, they said that's the highest his education went up to. I don't believe that because he did end up graduating and he does end up going to college at some point. So I don't believe that's just, I mean, I guess because he doesn't have a college degree.
Well, I mean, some people, they're like really smart, you know, like some murderers and serial killers, they're like highly intelligent.
Yeah, but like a lot of them got their education and went on to be, you know, quote unquote, like respectable members of society, but were just like fucking murderers.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
You know, behind closed doors. So, but he wasn't one of those. So he just, I don't know, he was good up until the eighth grade. And he graduated the eighth grade with honors. All of his friends, you know, they thought he was the bee's knees. He was so cool. And everybody just kind of respected this kid because he was a good kid. And all of that kind of just came to like a halt and crash when he hit the ninth grade. And that's when he just cared less about his studies and doing good. And he's out here doing hard shit with his friends, cutting up, hitting the streets, ripping and running. Like my mom used to say, you ain't about to be out here ripping and running, kids. I don't know if his parents said the same thing. So, you know, that's when he just kind of started acting up. And from there, just kind of, it went downhill for a bit. I mean, he came back and tried to be a good member of society. It just didn't stick.
Yeah.
It just didn't stick. So one of his first crimes, he was obviously doing crimes like the entire time, like from ninth grade all the way up.
Misdemeanor crimes?
Yeah, you know, just like little like slaps on the wrist, but he didn't actually get charged until 1959. And what I found, it said for disturbing the peace, but, and the thing that I watched, it was for loitering and peering into people's homes, watching in their windows, which I think is way different than disturbing the peace. I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
you were gonna disturb my peace if you're looking in my windows. Yeah. So I get it. So he was arrested for that, but that one only went, you know, it's just stopping to say, gave him a fine for it, and then he went back home. So his parents kind of convinced him to get back into his studies, and that's when he ended up graduating high school. But a year later, or no, actually not even a year later, in that same year, he was arrested again for disturbing the peace, aka you know, loitering on somebody's property and looking in their damn windows again. And this time when he was arrested, he hit the cop in the face and broke his nose. So he was charged with not only, you know, being creepy as fuck, but for now, like, you just assaulted an officer.
Yeah.
So he went to jail. That's what he did. He spent he spent 14 months in prison at the time. And once he was released, with some help from his parents, they got him into Youngstown University, which is in Ohio, if you didn't know. So he went for a year, and then he dropped out, obviously. This guy still don't know what he want to do. And I think, I don't know if it was the year that he dropped out. So he, you know, obviously lost interest in doing the whole college thing. And I mean, he just lost interest in being, you know, on the straight and narrow, because he kind of just wanted to do his own thing. So he came home back to Aliquippa and was kind of doing like odd jobs, just like, you know, quick things to make a buck. I mean, he stayed busy. He wasn't really getting in trouble during this time. And then he got drafted to the Army, because this is when they were doing the drafts. So he was in the Army for a couple of years, and he did like really good over there. And he had an honorable discharge, which was good. And he came home. I think his father passed while he was in the Army, or shortly after he got back from the Army. And so, you know, he had to inherit his father's business, because, you know, he's an entrepreneur. He had that good job. He was respected in the community, and he tried to keep it afloat, but he couldn't, because he just isn't as or wasn't as business savvy as his father was. And so it got foreclosed, and he no longer had that business. So after that, he joined the Navy next. And he did that for a while, up until, you know, because this, I guess in the Navy, it was a lot more like combat and just like constantly being fired at. So there was an explosion that happened, and he got hurt big time from it. And he had an injury, I believe, to his chest. He had a really bad concussion and a ruptured eardrum.
Damn.
So my boy was jacked up. So he's kind of in and out of, you know, military hospitals and things like that to make sure that he was good. And once he was cleared, he was sent back home.
Honorary?
So once he got back home, it never said. It never said.
Well, I guess I think when you're injured,
I think it would be too. But like, I think when you're discharged for being wounded, I think it's called like something else.
Oh.
Okay. I think it's probably given like a different name. I don't know all the different terms of that, but if you're listening and you do know, let us know.
Yeah.
I don't know shit about the Navy or the Army or anything like that. I just know that y'all doing what you gotta do, and we respect you. He was wounded, and then when he was released, he met a woman whose name wasn't disclosed in anything. There's nothing mentioning who his wife was.
Oh, so they got married?
It never mentions if he has a wife, and never mentions if he has any children. There's like nothing about his personal life in that time. So I don't.
So he just met this woman, but it doesn't say if like
met a girl and married her. That's all it said. There's nothing else about this. And he decided he wanted to move to North Carolina. So a lot of the crimes that he committed are going to be around PA and Ohio. I do believe he committed something in North Carolina, but I think he's in jail in Florida.
What?
So he's moved around a lot. Yeah. It's really weird. So when he was in North Carolina, he became a truck driver. And while he was being a truck driver, he started to act really weird. He started to act antisocial, and he was beginning to show clear signs of PTSD, which everybody knows most vets end up suffering from. It's really sad, and, you know, if not treated right, it can turn into something very volatile. So I think that's kind of like, I think going to the Army and to the Navy. And in 1973, he was arrested in Virginia Beach, Virginia for, okay, so this is going to be a little graphic. This is a trigger warning. It is about a child. Just a warning. He was arrested for attempting to rape a 13-year-old boy. So I'm not super sure if he had attempted to do this to the boy or if he actually did, because I watched something and it said some pretty sus stuff about what he might have done. I'm not going to get into that because I'm not sure if it happened or not. But these are there were allegations thrown towards him. So he was arrested for that. And he did eventually end up being convicted for it in March of 1974. And he ended up serving less than 4 years. Less than 4 years.
Wow. Because it was attempt.
I don't know. Who fucking knows how he got out? But like, if somebody's out here trying to attempt to rape little boys or like have done that, maybe keep them away forever.
Yeah.
Maybe keep them away forever. Because what's going to stop him? If he just attempted.
Yeah.
Huh?
I said, I mean, you know how I feel about that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, if you're going to attempt to do something like that, like if he's just attempting now, it's going to escalate to him actually doing it later on. So I don't really know.
Yeah.
Why we're going to let him ever get out.
That's a sign right there. Like, hello.
So he served, you know, less than 4 years for that. And then he was paroled and released in 1977. And he returned back to Aliquippa because he loves him some Aliquippa. He just loves Aliquippa so much. He's just always going to go back. And then from there, just kind of skyrockets into being just absolutely fucking heinous. Okay. So after that, he was under police suspicion in April 1978. So this is just a year after the fact that he was released. And at the time, he was working at a truck driver company based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Shout out North Carolina, where my North Carolinas at? And during his professional career from 1977 to 1978, he visited cities in both Ohio and Pennsylvania, where a series of at least 27 unsolved murders stirred because I was like, don't read the whole fucking thing, like, just I'm just taking, you know. So I'm just being so fucking stupid. Okay, let's start that over again. Drum roll, please. 27 unsolved murders were back in that area. 27. That's a double digit number. That's scary. Okay, so this guy, you know, the police are like, there are 27 unsolved murders, like I said before. He was eventually arrested and interrogated, but he did deny being the guy who had anything to do with any of these. Like, he just was like, you know what, guys?
I didn't do that shit. What the fuck? It wasn't me.
Sounds good. Sounds like you guys have the right idea about what's going on. But the one thing that's wrong is me. I had nothing to do with that. And he just denied it. And since they didn't have, you know, any sufficient evidence, they were kind of just, you know, forced to let him go. And, you know, there's that one guy that was like, it was him.
Yeah,
and everybody else was like, come on, like, we gotta move on. We gotta either we get evidence on this guy or we just kind of leave it. So he was released on June 6, 1978. He was seen in his hometown of Aliquippa in a car that belonged to 66-year-old Luther Langford, who had been killed at his home in Western Columbia, South Carolina.
Luther,
but not Vandross. Is that his last name?
I have no idea.
I have no clue. My granddad would punch me in the head if he heard me. Sorry. I'm just a kid. Okay, so on June 1st, he was murdered. Luther was murdered.
My Luther.
Luther, thanks, welcome. And they found his body with several blows to his head from a baseball bat. Damn. His wife had also been beaten, but she managed to survive. We got a survivor.
Go, sis.
And clearly, like, they know who did it because they found him in his car. So while being arrested, Surratt, in spite of several warning shots, so they're shooting at him, he just completely resisted 7 officers and managed to escape. While he escaped, he ended up hiding in a nearby metallurgical plant on the Ohio River. I don't know what that is, but I'm gonna say it's a metal plant. Oh my god, we're all over the place with this. I'm like loopy. Okay, so he was just basically hiding from everybody, and obviously, you know, everybody had to look for him. So they did a search, but they couldn't find him, and so he was put on a wanted list. And yeah, he was gone. So they ended up searching the car, and what they did find in the car was the bat that the couple was beaten with, and his fingerprints were all over it. But that's not all they found, my dear friend. Ask me what they found. Go ahead.
What did they find?
Well, I'll tell you what they found. So in the car, they found a bunch of stuff from a lot of his other victims. So we're going to get into that now. They found a number of items belonging to a 30-year-old disabled Vietnam War veteran, Joseph Weinman, and his wife, 29-year-old Catherine, who were beaten to death on September 30th, 1977, in their Marshall Township home in Pennsylvania. They found the evidence to, you know, put him in with that murder, but he's also a suspect in the murder of 28-year-old Frank Ziegler, who was shot with a .38 caliber revolver. I don't know what kind of gun that is. On September 27th.
It's like a revolver.
I don't even know what a revolver is. I don't know.
You know Russian roulette, how they like stick a bullet in and they like spin the thing?
Yes.
That's a revolver.
Oh. And it's got like, you know, that Russian roulette gun.
So he was shot with a Russian roulette gun.
Yeah. So he was shot with one of those crazy guns on September 27th, a few hundred meters away from the Weinman couple's house. The murders of 34-year-old Richard Hyde and his wife Donna, who were killed with a shotgun at their Moon Township home on December 4th, which isn't too far away from where I currently live, as well as in November. Moon Township.
Oh my God. I have been in Moon Township plenty of times.
I know, and nobody would have knew. We was none the wiser.
Oh my God.
As well as the November 20th murders of 29-year-old William Adams and his wife Nancy in Falston, Pennsylvania. Adams' corpse was found in his house, but his wife, you know, still remains missing. So, you know, still to this day, they haven't been able to find
him.
They still have not. Or still to this day, they have not been able to find her. Excuse me, I'm so sorry. I don't think her remains are ever going to be recovered, just because at this point, I mean, it's decades old. She's gone.
Dang.
And it's sad. It's sad. It really is. So on New Year's Eve, 1977, Surratt was in Breezewood, which once again, really close to where I live. On that day, 64-year-old Guy Mills, his wife Laura, and 36-year-old Joel Kruger were all killed by an assailant with a shotgun. In addition, credit card receipts and a number of other evidence showed that Surratt was in Boardman, Ohio, not far from where another similar murder occurred, making him a prime suspect in the killings altogether. So.
Dang.
He was on a killing spree.
Yeah.
He was on a killing spree. He just... He was just out here killing all these people. So in the one case where they found the man deceased in the home, but they found the wife was like missing. They had two children in the house. Two children. I guess they never like woke up. I don't know how the cops ended up being like alerted of like what happened or what. I know the kids were unharmed.
Oh, that's
good. So that's good. But to do that with like two young kids in the house.
Yeah.
And like they never know like what happened to their mom. Like they never get that closure.
Yeah.
She was just snagged in the middle of the night. And he would case these homes before he like went in and like did anything or robbed them or killed them. Like he plotted very carefully. And I think he knew because the police were on his ass. And for a while he was called the shotgun killer. Like he was called the shotgun killer. But he wasn't just killing people with shotguns, so.
Right, they had that Russian roulette gun.
Exactly. They thought that person would listen. Like, he should have just been like, kill you with whatever I have kind of killer. Because he went from a baseball bat to guns. Kill you with things of opportunity killer, you know? Or they should have just called him piece of shit who kills people. I don't know. He was killing like old people.
I don't understand young people. Why, like, the media gives killers like a name. Because that only like thrives them.
They give them like cool names. They should give them like really like shitty names.
They shouldn't give them any names at all. Like, well, like Zodiac think, killer. Like obviously that person's gonna be like living on the fact that he's the fucking Zodiac killer. Like, that's a dope ass name.
Yeah, but I don't think like you have to give them something that's gonna like captivate like an audience who's gonna read this too though. Because these are like journalists.
I know. I just it's just dumb to me.
It's annoying, but it's
because you're giving them the attention that they want.
Absolutely. Okay, so now we're gonna get on to, you know, the arrest and the trial and then the aftermath of everything, because there's always aftermath. And, you know, he admitted to killing some more people later on. So in late June of 1978, he went to Florida. He stopped in Volano Beach. And on July 1st, he burgled into a house and attacked the family of three living in it. He beat up the father and he threatened the women, and he sexually violated, he sexually violated the couple's 15-year-old daughter, which, like, what the actual fuck?
For real.
What the fuck? So after having his way with her, he got drunk and used drugs and ended up falling asleep in the room.
Oh, damn.
So when all of this is going down, the dad is able to get free, and he just runs and calls the police immediately. When the police do show up, they do catch Surratt off guard, and he is arrested with no issue.
Nice.
Because at this point, he's been on the run for a long time. He's been causing all of this mayhem, and now he's caught. So, and once again, this was in 1978. So during the course of the investigation and on the evidence that they found, he was checked for the involvement in at least, at the time that they knew, 18 murders. And he, like, I guess with what they were checking with, what he was doing, it was similar to like a lot of stuff that burglars and like break-ins and stuff, like it was all very similar to like his MO and like what had happened in this case in which they found him in. So obviously they were investigating him into that. So he's obviously arrested, and now they have to have a trial for him. So his trial was in the fall of 1978 in Volusia County. On September 20th, by a jury verdict, he was found guilty of burglary, assault involving rape, and threatening with murder. On October 27th, he was sentenced to 2 life imprisonment terms and an additional 200-year imprisonment.
Dang.
He was going to wait for a long time.
Yeah.
Following this trial, he was extradited to Lexington County, South Carolina, where he was tried for the murder of Langford and the attempted murder of his wife. In the summer of 1979, he was found guilty and was given 2 additional life imprisonment terms. At his first trial, Surratt confessed to the murder of 56-year-old John Shelkins, who was shot with a shotgun at his home in Baden, Pennsylvania on January 7th, 1978, as well as attacking his wife, Catherine, who was beaten severely but lived, however. In view of him already being sentenced to 2 long terms of imprisonment, the Beaver County prosecutors refused to prosecute or formally charge him in 1980.
Wow.
Which, like, I get, like, when they don't want to continuously, like, keep charging somebody, because it's, like, I yeah. guess, like, in their opinion, it's, like, what's the point? We have to come to court. We have to do all this
over
again. Well,
if he ever does an appeal, they can always, like, can't they, like, bring up other people? Like, they can charge him with another thing.
Well, I don't even know.
Like, he will never get out, because, like, they can just keep charging him. But, like, it doesn't, like,
if he would get any appeals with.
Oh, true.
I mean, the stuff he's charged with, I don't know if he was sent without the chance of parole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, I get like why they're like, oh, like we just don't feel like doing this whole thing again, because this guy's in there forever.
Right. Like he's he's put away. But that doesn't give the other families justice.
Yeah. I mean, they get closure because they know who did it, and they know that that person's never going to get out. And they have.
But it's not like closure for like he's not going away for murdering like that single person. You know.
Yeah.
Like he. It just it's wild.
Yeah. It's sad. It's that's a very complicated situation to be in.
Yeah.
It does. Especially with serial killers, because there's so many damn cases, and you have to have like very sufficient evidence for all of these to prove that it was them.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how this stupid piece of fucking sack of fucking shit just couldn't, you know, be a really good inmate. You know, he wasn't very good on the outside. Clearly, he was just murdering people because, you know, that's just what he wanted to do. So you would think maybe just being inside of, you know, jail, he'd be better, but of course not. And so our dear friend was moved to various institutions all across Florida. So we're going to get into that. On May 8th of 1993, during a transfer to a prison in Polk County, he attempted to escape by attacking a police officer and seizing his vehicle, but was prevented from doing so. He was charged with attempt escape and convicted in May of 1994 and received an additional 2 years and 6 months imprisonment. But that doesn't stop him. That doesn't stop him from stirring the pot, because in 2007, Surratt confessed to 6 additional murders.
Damn.
6 additional murders. So they were the murders of David and Linda Hamilton, committed on September 20th, 1977, in Beaver Township, Ohio. The murder of 63-year-old John Davis and his 61-year-old wife, Mary, killed with a shotgun in Beaver Township in November 1977. Surratt also claimed to have killed 17-year-old John Feeney, who was shot to death on October 22nd, 1977, in Finlay Township, or I don't know if it's Finlay or Finley. I don't know, I might be messing that up, but this is in Pennsylvania, while trying to meet his 16-year-old fiance, Renee Greger. After finding Feeney's body, Greger was reported missing, with her fate remaining a mystery, still to this day. According to Surratt, after killing John, he took Renee hostage and took her to a wooded area where he threatened to rape her before shooting her in the mouth and burying the body. They're saying her fate is a mystery, but I mean, I guess Surratt's basically admitting to the fact that
he killed her.
Yeah. So I don't know why they're saying like it remains a mystery, because
maybe because they haven't found her body or something.
I guess. But, you know, he says after, you know, he killed John, he took Renee hostage and took her to a wooded area where he threatened to rape her before shooting her in the mouth and burying the body. Edward agreed to indicate Greger and Hamilton's burial sites, as well as to testify in other murders, in exchange for a transfer to a penitentiary in South Carolina. So I guess he wanted to go there because the conditions were much lenient. But they denied him, and there was no agreement reached. So he just never showed it to them because they didn't agree. So those two kids are still, you know, sadly missing. But here we are in 2021. So in 2021, he's still imprisoned in the Florida State Prison in Rayford, Florida. So he confessed to all of those murders, obviously up here in the north, that he committed in PA and everything, but the PA district attorney decided not to prosecute him for any of the murders because he's already serving the rest of his life in prison, and he will remain doing that down there in Florida.
Good. He deserves it.
He does.
Does he get the best side? Does he get the death penalty?
No. So he was never given the death penalty. He's not on death row. He's just, you know, serving life.
Dang.
I think he's 67 years old today, but I could be wrong. Hold on, let me see. No, I'm way off. He's 79
I was
years
gonna
old.
say, he shouldn't be 67. He should be older than that.
I don't know why I said he's 77. I'm so stupid. Yeah, he's 79. And
Dang.
he's worse for wear. Have you seen a picture of him yet?
No.
Please go and look him up right now.
Okay, so I just looked up his picture and oh my God.
He
He,
looks rough.
yeah.
He's been through it. He's been through it.
Yeah. I seen his older, like his older picture, like I guess what he would look like today. And I'm guessing this is his younger picture that I'm looking at, but I didn't expect him to look like that. Yeah, that's his
I
younger
didn't
picture.
know what he was gonna look like either. So I did like a lot of the research without even like taking a glance like at any of his pictures yet. And then when I finally did see him, I was just like,
There's actually like a couple pictures that I don't know if they're okay. I see what he looks like, but there's like other people who have his name, and it's crazy because
they also never show any pictures of his. I haven't seen a single picture of his victims either. So,
I
the
see a
only picture I
couple.
see is of the woman that he took. And
I see a picture of a couple, and then I see Renee and Gregor.
yeah, so I see Renee and Gregor,
Yeah, there's not a
and I
lot.
also see.
I also see Donna Hyde. Her body was beaten and found by searchers. It's not like an actual like photo of her. It's like distorted and stuff. But yeah, I didn't expect him to look like that at all.
No, Nancy, that's what I'm talking about. It took me a while to find her name, but there's a picture of Nancy there, and I never seen a picture of her until like just now too. So
So yeah, that's
it's just,
crazy.
yeah, there are a couple of pictures of his victims, which it's like, it's so sad because he took all of these lives, and like, for what? He looks way different from when like he was originally like arrested and
Yeah,
stuff, you know?
like his younger picture to like now, he looks way different.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. That case was, that was kind of crazy.
Yeah, it wasn't the craziest one, and it was like, it's kind of close to where we're from, so that's what I wanted to
Yeah.
do the first case on. Yeah, so I don't know what we're gonna be doing next.
I
Hopefully it's
know what we will
better.
be doing next. I
Oh,
know.
if we're doing what I think we're doing, I'm still in the dark, but I do have an idea because
Yeah.
she had me watch an episode on
The
it,
next case will
so
be my case.
it's fucking insane. It's insane. It's insane. It's insane. And
Yeah.
we're gonna have a TV show to shout out to you guys too. So stay
Yeah, stay
tuned.
tuned
Check
for
that out
that.
next. I do hope you guys like this episode. This was, I mean, obviously this is our first official episode that we did, and I'm sick. I tried my best, and I feel like it just sounds like I'm rambling and blah,
Yeah.
but they'll be better from here on out. We're just beginners, not professionals.
Yeah. In a couple years, we'll look back on this and be like, we got way better.
Literally just fall apart.
Yeah.
Okay, but everybody, so that's gonna be the episode. I hope you guys enjoyed your drinks. I hope you enjoyed the story. Now, if you want to write Edward a letter, go ahead and do that. No, I'm just kidding. We don't bully this man in jail. He's
No,
already in
but you
jail for
can write
keeps.
us a letter at drunkendeadofficial@gmail.com. Follow us on Insta at drunkendeadofficial, on Twitter at drunkendeadofficial, and we're also on Facebook. Just look up Drunken Dead. We're there. Follow us.
Absolutely. Give us a follow, send us a message, hit us up.
Yeah, and we will
HFU.
also be posting pictures of this man on our social medias. So if you want to check that out, make sure to follow us. And if you're listening to this and you have checked out our social medias, leave a comment in the comment section and let us know.
And don't forget to subscribe.
Turn on your notifications to get our updates. you know, our podcast update to let you know when a new episode is coming. And yeah, just go do it. Just do it.
Just do it. Just go do it. Just take
it. Okay, guys. Just go do it. But thank you for listening. This is the Drunken Den.
Don't forget, be kind.
And drink wine.
Bye.